Okay, so I'm Nancy Miller, as Pat said. So I'm with the Aging and Public Health section. So since I'm with the Aging and Public Health section, let me put a plug in for the Aging and Public Health section. If you don't have a section, you can find a home with us. If you do have a section, you can join us as a secondary member. So that's my part for my section. So I'm going to be presenting some work this afternoon related to a relation between a usual source of care and patient and provider interactions among older adults with disabilities. I should say this is a part of several studies that we've been doing that have been funded by the National Institute of Disability and Rehabilitation Research. So I'd like to begin by acknowledging my co-authors. So Adele Kirk is here, and Adele will be presenting after my presentation with some related work. We've also been working with Lucas Gloss, who's in our doctoral program at UMBC. So just a little bit of background. Many of you know that close to 20% of the non-institutionalized population in the United States experiences a disability. This comes from the survey of income and program participation. We're all familiar with a number of kind of national and increasingly state efforts focused on tracking and eliminating healthcare disparities. One of those is congressionally mandated work that's done by the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality. And in that study, they track healthcare disparities by race, ethnicity, socioeconomic status, and then look at a number of what they call priority populations, and people with disabilities are one of the priority populations that have been tracked. People with disabilities are also a focus of Healthy People 2010 or 2020 in terms of a number of initiatives there. There's a small but a growing body of research that suggests that people with disabilities receive fewer prevention and treatment services. So this would be things like screening and assessments for things like breast and cervical cancer, colon cancer, receipt of things like vaccinations. The most consistent findings there particularly relate to women with disabilities and their experiences around screening for cervical and breast cancer. The story's a little more inconsistent and has to do with factors such as the type of disability that a person has, the duration of disability, and the different types of measures that you're looking at when you're considering use of services. So it's also possible that people, in addition to actually receiving fewer services, may experience poorer quality of care. I think many of us, if not all of us, are familiar with Don Abedian's conceptual model related to quality of care, where he looked at structural factors, processes of care, and outcomes as different dimensions of quality of care. Anita Stewart, who's at the University of California, San Francisco, for several years has been doing some very interesting work, focusing not on the technical dimension, which are kind of tests and procedures and competence, but really looking at what she identified as social psychological aspects of patient-provider interactions. And her work has focused particularly on low-income minority populations in San Francisco. And in her work, she's identified three dimensions, which include communication with your provider, decision-making, or how you and your provider engage or don't engage in decision-making processes around treatment decisions and things. And then a third dimension, which is known as interpersonal style, so it captures things like how much whether your provider treats you with respect. I would say more recent work, when she's continued to validate this, she's added a fourth dimension, which actually goes beyond provider interactions and looks at how people are treated by the staff in office settings and other places like that. So there's some evidence out there that people with disabilities experience disparities in these interpersonal interactions. They report poor communication. Several people have found that people with disabilities identify issues of stigma and disrespect, One study, the MAESL study, was actually conducted here in Boston several years ago. They did focus groups with people with different types of disabilities, so a focus group with people with HIV/AIDS, a second group people with serious mental health problems, physical disabilities, and then looked at findings across those. And just as an example, they found that in a focus group with people with serious mental health issues, that participants described clinic staff who thought that they were street people and treated them with disrespect. So there is some evidence out there that there are kind of poor processes of care. And our interest in this particular study is to kind of look at that in terms of whether there are differences, but in particular look at whether having a usual source of care, which has been associated with a number of other kind of improved measures in terms of continuity of care, satisfaction, and receipt of certain services, whether that could might also be related to your interactions. One might imagine if you're seeing a provider on a consistent basis that you may develop a better, you and your provider together may develop kind of better interactions relative to not ever seeing the same person, and that those in turn, those interpersonal processes may relate to different measures of use and satisfaction. So we're doing two things in this study. We're looking at what predicts having a usual source of care, who's either a provider or a site. So a site would be something like a clinic, relative to having no usual source of care among older adults with disabilities. And then looking at whether having a usual source of care has any relation to these interpersonal processes of care. We use Anderson's behavioral model of healthcare. I won't go through the model, but I'll say in particular our analyses focus on what was the original focus of Anderson's model, which is the individual predisposing, enabling, and need characteristics. And in that context, we can think about having a usual source of care as really an enabling characteristic or a facilitator of access and use of services. And in some respects, one might also think about this notion about how one interacts with your provider as also kind of along the way influencing how people may access and use services. So we hypothesize that people who have a usual source of care are going to have more positive interactions, and we also hypothesize that those who have a provider will have the most positive interactions, a place kind of intermediate, and the poorest interactions related to those people who have no usual source of care. We use the Medical Expenditure Panel Survey. Many of you are familiar with this. It's a subsample of the National Health Interview Survey. Collects lots and lots of data. Of importance for our study in particular, it asked four questions related to interactions between patients and providers. We pool MEPS data for 2001 to 2007 for adults age 50 and older to yield a sample size of a little over 8,500 people. Let me go back here. So our variable of interest is having a usual source of care, again measured as having no usual source, a site or a place as a usual source or provider, a number of covariates including the usual age, gender, race, ethnicity. You can see the different measures there. Our focus, because one of the things we've noticed in doing work related to disability, that there are lots of different measures out there in terms of how people think and define disability. So our measure is a measure that basically was put together by Barbara Altman and is used both in the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality National Disparity Studies as well as is used in Healthy People 2010. She basically looks at six different types of disabilities, so something like a sensory disability or physical disability or work limitations, and categorizes those as a basic only, which is something like a sensory disability, complex only, which captures more of kind of social interaction, so it would include work limitations and functional limitations, and then people with both basic and complex limitations. And then again, our dependent variable, which didn't make it into a slide, I realized later. In addition to first predicting a usual source of care, then we're interested in looking at the relation between a usual source of care and four measures, which include whether the provider, how well the provider communicates with you, spends enough time, is respectful and listens to you. So very briefly, we used for our estimation of a usual source of care a generalized order, a LOGIT model, and that's because there are categories, but there's a kind of natural ordering with none being the least preferred and having a provider as a usual source of care the most optimal. And then for the four interaction measures, those are kind of four-point Likert scales that we dichotomize and use LOGIT models and develop relative risks to facilitate interpretation of study finding and do the adjustments for the MEPS complex survey design. So, quickly, just in terms of what predicts having a usual source of care, and again, this is among adults 50 and older with disabilities. Women were had a lower relative risk of having no usual source of care and a higher relative risk of having a provider relative to men. Both blacks and Hispanics had higher relative risk of no usual source of care and lower relative risk of having a provider. As one might expect, relative risk increased with income. We also found that people who were insured by Medicare or had dual coverage, so they were either insured by Medicare and Medicaid, or they were insured by Medicare and they had supplemental private policy, also had lower risk of no usual source of care and higher relative risk as a provider. And not surprisingly, is that life continues to be bad if you lack insurance. And by far the largest effect we saw here was that people who lacked health insurance had 3.61 the relative risk of no usual source of care and 0.68 the relative risk of having a provider. So. Does that matter? In terms of looking at interpersonal processes of care, we can see across measures. So here, our reference category is people who report that they have a provider as a usual source of care. So relative to a provider, people with no usual source of care had lower relative risks across the four dimensions of interpersonal processes of care, and these were all significant. In terms of a place, they also had relative risks. They were higher than no usual source of care, but still lower than a person who had a provider. And again, these were all significant across these dimensions. In terms of a few additional findings, we found that Hispanics across three of the four measures actually reported higher relative risk or better interpersonal processes of care with their providers relative to white older adults with disabilities. In contrast, although there were fewer significant findings, black older adults had a lower relative risk of reporting that their provider explained things to them. Education and income effects were in the expected direction. Basically, as education increases and income increases, the relative risk for having more optimal interactions increases. And then we also found some evidence that people who had both a basic, so again, something like a physical limitation and a complex disability, so something like a work limitation, if they had those combined, had lower relative risks across the measures compared to people who had a basic limitation only. And lastly, uninsured adults, while that was strongly associated with having a usual source of care, we found fewer relations between that and interactions with their providers. So a couple of policy implications. You didn't see the full regression results here, but I think what's clear, just in terms of the relative risk measures, is that people who lack the usual source of care, the most consistent finding, and also the largest substantive effect, meaning that the relative risks that we observed were lowest and were the lowest relative risks across measures, were greatest for people who lacked a usual source of care. And those with a place, it was also smaller, although on par somewhat with some of the other measures, but significant and but a smaller substantive effect. So this suggests, again, if we're thinking about this as a measure of quality, that there's poorer quality of care that's associated with having no usual source of care or a place as a usual source of care. I started to reflect in our sample what the numbers were. The numbers actually, when you look at people with the usual source of care, people with disabilities are much more likely to have a usual source of care than people without disabilities. That holds across age ranges, and people with disabilities are also much more likely to have a provider relative to a place in terms of a usual source of care. So we don't observe a lot of people in our sample who don't have a usual source of care or place, but there are people who don't, and so kind of a first step forward would be, in terms of policy implications, would be to increase access to a usual source of care. So many of us are familiar now with the insurance expansions that are part of the Affordable Care Act that are going on as we speak in terms of both the expansions into state health exchanges, and if you're in a state where Medicaid is expanding, some Medicaid expansions there. So at least we saw that being uninsured was by far the largest predictor of not having a usual source of care. Providing access to health insurance should facilitate that. There are also provider payment changes in both the Medicare and Medicaid. They're time limited right now, but enhancing access to primary care providers may facilitate access to a usual source of care. A primary care provider and facilitating access are also, there are a lot of models that are being tested or supported in the Affordable Care Act. So health homes. I actually was just two sessions ago, I was in a session specific to people with serious and persistent mental health disorders, and they were talking about the role that a medical home health might have in terms of providing improving care for that type of disability, and I think the same could be said across people with a range of different types of disabilities. And so our work would suggest it supports continuing to look at and supporting kind of new models of primary care that in particular support access to a usual source of care. And then a couple of concluding notes. One of the things that Stuart and our colleagues talk about is these technical processes. So if we go back and we think about tests or even the bullet that I started out with that documented that people with disabilities often receive fewer prevention services and treatment services, Stuart suggests that those kind of technical processes may be very much related to interpersonal processes. And so kind of a next step of this would be to look at these relations among interpersonal processes, technical processes. So if you have improved interpersonal relations with your provider, which again are enhanced by usual source of care, does that enhance your receipt of preventive services, reduce emergency department use, and in turn influence health outcomes and satisfaction with care? So that's a little bit about where this research is headed. I will say, just for kind of a concluding comment, related to having a usual source of care and people with disabilities, although that there's a lot of evidence that that facilitates access. It doesn't, we've done some work, actually we presented it in a poster on Sunday, where we found that looking at emergency department use, we found a strong effect of having a usual source of care on reducing emergency department use for both non-emergent and potentially avoidable care. And we also found an effect related to people with disabilities above and beyond that. And what that suggests is that having a usual source of care is very helpful, but that we also need to be thinking about some other factors there to enhance access to care for people with disabilities. So thinking about things like the accessibility of providers, the cultural competency of providers to work with people with disabilities, and some of those things need to be and will continue to be a part of this exploration also. So with that, well, thank you. And
do you want to introduce your...
Oh, Pat was instructing, asking me to introduce my colleague, and I was clapping for her and not for myself. So, so I would like to welcome Adele Kirk to the podium now to present. It's actually a nice kind of follow along to the work that I was describing. Adele is a faculty member with me at the at UMBC. We're both in a Department of Public Policy and. And Adele's been a very key piece of the work that we've presented here to date and published, and she'll present a related study to this.